I think you'll pat yourself on the back and say, you know, I'm really glad I did that.
You are listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness, your number one resource for practical tips and insights, empowering you and your family to live well with Alzheimer's. Hello, I'm Mike Good of Togetherness. Welcome to episode 42 of The Alzheimer's Podcast, where my goal is always to empower you and your family to maintain a positive experience, reduce and eliminate the need for medications, and make your time together with those you care for the best it can be. Now, if you're following the show in May of 2018, then you know I just had 2 weeks off. And I hope during that time you had a chance to check out past episodes from the first year of the Alzheimer's Podcast. That's right, 1 year! This episode officially marks the 1 year anniversary. Thanks to all of you for making it a success, and a special shout out to Christy Turner, who has helped make this show the success it is by bringing her expertise to the show on a weekly basis. In this episode, Christy and I discuss how to know what your deal breaker is as a care partner to someone living with dementia. And what we mean by that is that you need to understand and accept your limitations so that you know when it's time to seek professional help or a move to memory care. Christy is a certified dementia practitioner, certified dementia care unit manager, and cognitive stimulation instructor. She has run award-winning memory care communities and assisted living and skilled nursing levels of care. Using her 16 years of experience and working with over 1,100 people living with dementia and their families, she's developed a system that helps families move from crisis management to confidence. Well, hello, Christy. Thank you for joining me for another episode of Navigating Rough Terrain with the Dementia Sherpa right here on the Alzheimer's Podcast.
My pleasure to be here. Thanks so much for having me back.
You're very welcome. It's always a pleasure. So, Christy, in your article, How Do You Just Figure It Out When It Comes to Memory Care? You recommend that care partners know their deal breaker for when to consider memory care for a loved one. Would you go ahead and just start us off today by explaining to myself and our listeners what you mean by a deal breaker and why it's important to know?
Absolutely. So first of all, I have to give credit for the question to one of the members of the Dementia Sherpa tribe, because I had written a little social media post on, you know, you need to figure out what your deal breakers are. And she was like, well, how do you just figure it out, Christy? I went, well, that's a very good question, Judy. Thank you so much. So deal breakers are, they come about because what I find in working with folks is typically they say to me when I ask them, you know, what are you hoping for? What's the outcome you're looking for? Knowing that unfortunately we're not at the point where we can cure this disease. But short of that, what do you want this to look like? And people typically say to me, well, I'd like to care for my person as long as I can. And I go, okay, well, what does that mean? And that's where the wheels kind of start to fall off the bus and people go, I don't know. I haven't really thought about that, because as dementia care partners, you're so consumed with what you're doing in a day, in a moment, that a lot of times you don't feel like you have any time to take a step back and think about what's really happening long term, right? You're just so caught up in the right now, which it's great to live in the moment, but you do need a strategy and a plan for down the road. And if you're not sure what your deal breaker is on when you feel like you can't do it anymore, then that leaves you in the really ugly position of needing to make a decision, a good decision, during a crisis. And I hate for people to be in that position. I think it's just awful to, you know, it's such an emotional situation anyway, and then to be expected to make a good decision during a life-altering, you know, crisis. It's one of those unfair things in life that with just a little bit of planning, we can avoid.
That makes sense to me. And I think also what I was thinking while you were talking is early into the disease, there's a lot of care partners underestimate the progression and what's going to be involved. And I think in one of your articles, you recommend definitely making sure you understand the disease progression so you know what is possibly coming down the road for your loved one, so that would help you also identify your deal breakers.
Definitely. And you know, there's like this crossroads or not crossroads. You're the engineer by training. You would know the right word. It's like that meeting point on like the XY axis where they meet, right? Because typically as care partners are figuring out what they're doing and feel like they're getting the hang of it, they're going through the so-called easy part, the beginning stages, and they hit that peak where they're like, okay, I got my arms wrapped around this. I know what I'm doing. And then their person's health starts to decline, sometimes precipitously, as the process is accelerating and progressing. And so now they're going, you know, their health is going downhill and the complications are becoming more apparent. And the care partner is exhausted going, I thought I had this figured out now. And it's like starting from scratch all over again as their person's needs are changing.
You talk about five general areas that the deal breakers fall into. Would you like to maybe step through those five with our listeners?
Sure. And I think the first one's pretty obvious, you know, so there's physical, right? How are you physically? And then financial, psychological, emotional, and spiritual. And I think people, to the extent that they are able to think about this before they get into a crisis, typically they think about physical and financial, and psychological, emotional, spiritual, not so much.
Right. In the physical, it's the care partner's physical. And I think that's often overlooked. That I think in your article you mentioned, are you able to help your loved one who may be bigger than you, and even if they're not bigger than you, 100-pound person or 110-pound person, if you're a man maybe caring for your smaller wife, we'll say, that can be very hard. And I mean, I know I can hurt myself with 20 pounds nowadays, it seems like, so.
Right. And I have, especially back in the day when I was working as a social services director earlier in my career, I can't tell you how many little 105-pound wives were in my building recovering from a hip fracture because they tried to save their great big husband's fall and weren't successful. So it can definitely go either way. And something that I think we really don't think about enough, and sometimes experiences happen to me that put me in mind of, oh my gosh, what would happen right now if I had a person and that was living with me or that I was responsible for? This would be bad. You know, a migraine. People who get migraines, they're miserable when that's happening. Some just aren't functional. You know, they have to be in a dark room, they're vomiting, they have chills, they just feel awful. Now imagine if you have a person living with dementia living with you and you're responsible for their care. Well, there's going to come a point when, you know, they need that 24/7 supervision. And sometimes, you know, well, not sometimes, always, it goes beyond that eventually, where it's beyond supervision and it's hands-on care. If you're incapacitated, you can't do that. Or you need a knee replacement and the doctor says, well, you know, we're not quite there yet. Let's give it, you know, let's plan on another couple of years. You don't want to live with that pain, but you understand the principle behind it. Okay, well, 2 years is a long time in dementia world. So what might be manageable right now if you had to have a surgery could be absolutely impossible later, 2 years later. You'd need extra help. So just looking at those things for yourself is really important.
Right. So under physical, like a deal breaker could be, I mean, if you're injured or, you know, or you can't help your loved one get to the the restroom in time because of maybe you can do it once, but you're not going to be able to do it repeatedly because of the difference in just the amount of work it takes to do it.
Right. You know, and so sometimes there are isolated situations, right? Like maybe you got food poisoning.
Right.
And so you don't expect that to be a long-term thing, but man, you need to have a phone number. You need to have somebody you can call that is going to step in and care for your person and make sure that they're okay. Because we all know, any of us who have ever had the misfortune of having food poisoning, you're out. You're not helping anybody. You're hoping to God somebody's going to help you, right?
Exactly.
And that's a bad situation. And so it's those little things we think, well, that doesn't happen all the time. No, it doesn't. But during that time, just imagine trying to take care, just think about trying to take care of your dog, let alone an actual full-grown person. So just having that backup plan and knowing what you're going to do, even in an isolated situation, is so important.
The next area that you say deal breakers fall into is financial. What does that entail?
Well, for some people, they're able to work outside the home, even while they're the primary responsible care partner. Responsible party is what it's called in long-term care, is that designation. And that's okay because you know that your person is safe in your home and they're earlier in the process. But as the condition progresses, they can't be at home alone. So if you're going to continue to work outside the home, what's your plan for having someone who's caring for your person while you're at work? You know, there's a reason that people require 24/7 supervision. You know, they get to that point, and that's not an if that happens. It will happen. When it happens, what's your plan? Because we're looking at safety. What you don't think will happen can happen. For example, 70% of people living with dementia wander at some point. And wandering is kind of a misnomer because they're not aimlessly looking, you know, like, oh, what should I do? Where should I go? They typically have a mission and it makes sense to them. So even though, you know, they're typically older and frailer and maybe don't walk so fast, people who think they need to get somewhere can move at a pretty good clip. And the thing is, we don't have any good indicators to figure out when or if that will happen. We just know 70%, that's the majority of people living with dementia, will do that at some point. And we don't know when it will happen. So you do have to have a plan in place before it happens.
Right. And so if you want that financial stability of working out of the home, then you have to make that decision whether you're going to get some in-home care or possibly look into a memory care environment.
Right, or a day program.
You know,
there's more than one option, but the point being, do you know what the options are? Have you looked into them? Do you have a feel for them? And are you making decisions in a timely manner so that you're, again, not in a crisis?
Area three for deal breakers is psychological, and I can't figure out what you would have under that one.
Well, this is typically where we get into family dynamics.
Okay.
So it can go a couple of ways. One is, you know, so if it's your parent and you have another parent or a step parent and you're not on the same page, that's going to be a problem, right? Or siblings, that can be a problem too. So, or if you're the second spouse and your spouse is living with dementia and they have adult children that never liked you or aren't supportive or live far away and are second guessing your every move. So you see, you know, family dynamics can get ugly very quickly under normal circumstances. Then you have a long-term chronic progressive illness involved. If the relationship isn't already solid between all of these players, it just magnifies more of what was already there, right? So if we were already talking about strained relationships, they're not going to magically heal. They're going to get worse. So how long are you able to deal with that, to manage that? How long do you want to manage that? Or are you flirting up to a red line where you're just like, the best thing is going to be where there's a neutral third party involved, meaning, you know, maybe there's memory care involved and everybody can just visit there. So that's one part of the equation. And the other part, psychologically, where it can get really tough is, and I've worked with several families like this, the person who's living with dementia was an abusive spouse or an abusive parent, and there is not a reservoir of goodwill.
Okay.
And nobody else in the family wants to think about this situation, wants to be involved in this situation, have cut ties, bridges have been burnt. And so you're kind of like the rotten egg. You know, you got left holding the bag. And so you're doing something that is very difficult and challenging and emotionally taxing under the best of circumstances. And now you have the added complexity of that. In my experience, people who have experienced domestic violence do not do well as primary care partners, because that is a lot to ask of someone where you have been the target or the victim. And now you are supposed to be filled with compassion and empathy for this person. That's just really tough. It takes superhuman strength and resiliency to do that. And for a lot of people, it can start to unravel years of therapy and work that they've done. So if you're in that psychological area, right? I mean, you can see where that is something that really deserves serious, heavy consideration before you make any type of commitment about caring for someone. And it's important to know, because a lot of people don't know this, it's important to know that there are professionals who can step in and manage the whole thing, and you don't even have to be involved if you don't want to be. So that's where guardianships, conservatorships, case management, care management, those types of things can come into play. So if you are in that situation, you know, just reach out and find the answers, you know, get the resources that you need so that you can step out of that situation.
That's great advice. I feel like I've met several care, you know, adult children whose relationships with their parents were strained, to say the least. And for these adult children seem to have more compassion, empathy, and just more of a conscience than maybe their parents had. And what happens is they carry so much guilt by not, you know, when they want to think about getting help or utilizing memory care, they carry guilt, and other family members even make them feel guilty. And it's just, so we just got to help our care partners know that they don't have to bear that guilt, right? There's
no guilt is so completely useless, and it will crush you. So I always tell the families I'm working with a couple of things that I just always come out of my mouth. One, you know, guilt is useless. Two, I'm never going to try to talk you out of your feelings. So feelings just are, that's okay. But I will say this, that one of the great things about having professionals involved, one of the great things about long-term care, is that those of us who are professionals within that, we take the person who's living with dementia and accept them for who they are right now. So we don't have a history with them. They can't push our buttons because they didn't create our buttons. They don't know where our buttons are. You know, and that's a huge thing. And we can have that unconditional positive regard for them and treat them in the way that they do need to be treated without any, you know, simmering resentment or anything like that. So there's that part of it. So the person is taken care of. The other part of it is, as a care partner who has been subject to domestic violence or any type of, you know, emotional, psychological, physical abuse, whatever it is, you are an important person just because you exist. There is no one on this planet that you need to feel like you are duty bound to sacrifice your psychological well-being for. You don't owe anyone that. And I think that that's a really important message. And I hope that if there's someone out there that needs to hear that, that they're tuning into this and are getting that. Because people who come from backgrounds like that have often been told over years upon years upon years that they're not worth anything. They're not worthy. And they don't deserve happiness or whatever. And I'm here to say, not true. And there are professionals who can help you out of this situation.
So psychological and emotional tend to overlap there. I see that. So we kind of touched a little on emotional. Are there any other?
Yeah, they do. And I think, you know, emotional overwhelm just a lot of times can come from that psychological place. I think it's a good thing to just be honest. You know, if you can't, you can't.
Right.
And that's okay. Other people in your life may feel like you owe them an explanation, or they may give you an indication that you owe them some type of explanation. And I always say this, when you have a sibling, a parent, a step parent, whatever it is, whatever the situation is, and they're kind of demanding of you an answer of why aren't you doing this or blah, blah, blah. I always think a good way to respond to that is to say, you know, I am more than happy to make space for you to come in and do all of those things that you just suggested. I'm happy for you to do that. And so, you know, you do have to say it civilly, right?
Yeah.
politely, but without rancor. Because if they have some vision of how they can do it better, or they a vision of how it should be, then by all means, they can should all over themselves rather than you, right? They can step right in, step right up, and execute their vision. You don't need to take that type of nonsense either.
Right. And you said should all over themselves. It sounds very similar to something all over yourself. But all right. So, Christy, the fifth area that you've identified that deal breakers fall into is spiritual. What does this entail?
This is something where I think that, you know, most care partners are women, and women typically have pretty good intuition. And the other thing that we've been trained to do is to ignore it. So call it your intuition, your gut, your inner voice, whatever you want to call it. When you hear that thing telling you no, or no, it's time, or no more, or whatever it is, please listen to it. So this is spiritual guidance. This is what I put in the spiritual category. So there's, you know, you've asked for help, right? Or you meditate, whatever it is. Go to yoga class. You've cleared your mind. And you just keep getting this resonant feeling, and it comes in many different forms, right? Inner voice, feeling, whatever it is, sign. If it's telling you, you know, you're done, no more of this, just listen to it, because I have yet to meet the person who is remorseful or full of regret that they did listen to their intuition or their inner voice or the sign or whatever it is. It's people who don't, who ignore it, who typically have regrets. And we go back and say, if only I'd listened to myself, or I knew that. I don't know why I ignored that feeling. So that just kind of, in general, in life, keeps you out of trouble or from making decisions you come to regret later.
Okay. For our last bit on this, during this conversation, what tips do you have for our care partners on how to figure all this out?
I think, you know, just grab a pen and paper and go through. I kind of put together a little quiz here with some questions to ask yourself in each area, things to consider, and then questions to ask yourself that will really help clarify. Are you the right care partner right now? And, you know, what should, there's that word again. what are some things to consider for down the road for figuring out what your deal breakers are. And I really recommend, this is so key, is now that you have it written down, you've gone through this exercise, you've given it some thought, date it, secure it, and then when you do make a decision to move your person into memory care, or when you make a commitment that you're going to care for them at home all the way through to their last breath, and it's just a stinky doodle kind of day, you have documented proof that you gave this careful consideration. There were specific reasons why you made the decision you did. And, you know, guilt is still going to eat you alive if you allow it to. But if you look at this, you know, go back and reflect a couple of years later after you've done this and see what you were thinking at the time and all of the things that you put into consideration, I think you'll pat yourself on the back and say, you know, I'm really glad I did that. And I'm kind of impressed with myself. I really thought this through. And that's a very important thing, because as a dementia care partner, you do need a lot of support, even if it's from future you.
That's awesome. I really hope our listeners take that to heart and sit down. And just to clarify, in your article, which I'll provide a link to in the show notes at togetherinthis.com/episode42, you actually have a list of questions and to help guide them through this analysis. So that,
yes.
Yeah. So we will definitely make sure I provide that link. And as we wrap up, Christy, any last or final thoughts?
Well, just in looking this at, you know, talking about this, it occurs to me there is another little quiz that can help people figure out, like, on the psychological, emotional, spiritual piece of it. It has an ugly name. I don't like it. It's called the Caregiver Burden Scale.
Okay.
But it does look at how stressed, it measures how stressed a care partner is feeling and kind of the whys of it. And I didn't link to that for some reason that escapes me now. So I will update this and include a link for that quiz that will be embedded in the list of questions that I list to kind of walk people through this exercise. So that's an additional tool to help care partners look honestly at what's going on for them right now.
I called it strain. It's the combination of burden and stress.
Yeah, I like that.
And I didn't create that. I took it from another, probably a caregiver strain index. All right. Well, Christy,
it might even be the same thing. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, Christy, thank you for sharing your thoughts and strategies with our listeners for identifying and analyzing their deal breakers for getting help and or deciding when to use memory care.
Always a pleasure to be with you and your listeners, Mike. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. This concludes our conversation with Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, right here on the Alzheimer's Podcast, your number one source for practical tips and insights. Be sure to check out the show notes at togetherinthis.com/episode42, where you will find all the mentioned resources and a link to Christy's website. Bye now. You've been listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness. For more information and to get the resources mentioned in this episode, visit togetherinthis.com/podcast.